Okay, good morning and welcome back. So thank you very much to the males for sponsoring, Mr. Nissen and Mr. MSD Male, who are sponsoring for the very special birth of a great-grandchild, Gad Shalom, in Israel, and many more, Mr. Hashem, and also in our honor, which is very, very kind of you, for our little Yehuda Yakir as well. We should always share the smachos. And I hope everybody likes the new environment over here, the new seating arrangements. This is what happens when carpets get cleaned. What we're going to deal with today is a topic which, of course, is the 10th ikar of the Rambam, the 10th fundamental of faith. But it's also a topic which is intriguing, and no question that we all wonder about this at various points during our life. There's no question that during our lives we encounter this, we think about this, we contemplate this. We wonder why it does work, why it doesn't work. So it's very important to get some of the basics, the basic building blocks in place in order for us to better understand what is really going on over here. The Rambam tells us, so let's just start at the very beginning. The Rambam in the Halacha, in the Pirush Mishnayos, tells us what this 10th Ikar is. Here's how he describes it in Source 1. Vayasoda Asiri, the 10th fundamental of faith, Shehu Yis'aleh, Yodaya Maase Bnei Adam V'loy Hizniham. Hashem knows what we're doing. He doesn't let us just, you know, He doesn't abandon us. V'loy Kada So'omer Ozav Hashem Es Ha'aretz. Not like those who say God abandoned the world. Ela K'moy She'omer Godol Ha'itza V'rav Ha'aliliya Asher Enecha P'kuchos Al Kol Darchei Bnei Adam. Rather, like the pasuk describes, Hashem knows what's going on. Hashem is very clearly aware of everything that we are doing. And the pasuk says, "Vayara Hashem ki raba ra'as ha'adam ba'aretz." So similarly, when the people were sinning at the times of Noach to a terrible degree, Hashem noticed that. The Torah tells us Hashem noticed. It wasn't that Hashem was, you know, hiding his face and deciding to ignore it. Hashem knew what was going on. V'omar zakas Sodom v'Amorah ki raba in the times of Avraham Avinu, when Sodom's actions were reaching a critical mass, Hashem noticed that. Harei Elu Morim, this teaches us, says the Rambam, Al Yasod HaAsiri HaZeh, that Hashem notices and cares what we do. What we do really matters. The way it is described in the Siddur, just to appreciate the little differences, the way we say at the end of davening is, Ani Ma'amin, I believe Be'emuna Shlem with perfect faith, Shabori Yisborach Shema Yodea Kol Ma'asei B'nei Adam, V'kol Ma'akshav Osam. Hashem knows all our actions, and what's he adding in? Thought as well. It's not just what you do, it's not just prescribing and making a safe environment. It's also about the way that we think about others. Hashem creates together all their hearts and understands them to all their actions. What is incorrect about the way that pasuk describes? What is the incorrect preposition in this pasuk? It says, "Amevin el kol maaseim." Hashem understands to all their actions. That's the incorrect preposition. It should say, "Hashem understands their actions." S, or just leave out any preposition altogether. "Amevin maaseim," their actions. Instead, what does it say? It says, "to all their actions." What is understood over here? What the Kabbalistic story, the Nefesh HaChaim, suggests is that means to say Hashem understands the ramifications of all our actions. That means to say Hashem knows that it's not for naught that we do things. Hashem knows where we're going, what the impact on the spiritual level our actions have. That's what is understood from this pasuk, just from the very fact the way the pasuk words it. How do we know, by the way, that thoughts must be included in this whole system? Meaning, how does the Ani Ma'amin, oh yeah, add to what the Rambam said specifically, not just actions, but also thoughts? Right, so but how does that, where does he know that from? You're right, that's true, but it's more fundamental than that. The Torah commands us to think, or the way we think. Meaning the Torah tells us what we should love, what we should hate. The Torah tells us that we should not, you know, envy others. Now, envy is governing emotions. So if the Torah is telling us that it cares about our emotions, that also means to say that Hashem cares and is going to take account for that as well, which makes a lot of sense, right? There's no requirement to do something which comes without the responsibility of and the consequence of that action or thought. And as we say, Yigdal Tzofer V'Yodea, Hashem looks and knows, Sesareinu. Our, what's the safe there?
Secret.
So here we get back into this. He knows even the innermost workings, the biases, the cognitive biases which allow us to do things. He knows the end of the matter at the beginning. So he knows, you know, he knows why it is that some things are really important to us, and we tell the rest of the world one thing, we know ourselves, and sometimes we don't even know ourselves why it is. Hashem knows that. Hashem knows why it is that we do things. That is this ikar. So let's just a few basic questions before we get into it. Question number one is, isn't this part and parcel of believing in God? Just appreciate why this is significant. Isn't this part and parcel of believing in God? Doesn't knowing that there's a God automatically tell us that there is what we'll call Hashkocha, that Hashem knows? Is that true or not?
No,
absolutely not. It is possible to imagine a God, to imagine a power that created the world as a very fascinating science experiment, and then went fishing, and then went on and to create another whole bunch of worlds. And in the meantime, you say, God wound up this world, and everything's really nice now, and then puts it into action, and look at this fascinating experiment. It's like, you know, you shoot the pool ball, and the ball hits the triangle. Now all the balls are moving in all different directions, and that keeps going. That's fascinating. And there's, you know, friction only slows it down over a few billion years, and so you have a long time to see how this is going to work. That's one way of looking at the world, and many people looked at the world that way. You could believe in a God who's no longer interested in the world. So this is why this is a very significant set of beliefs that is in addition to the fact that there's a God. This is why it is, the Ramban explains, that there are three tiers in the patterns of the plagues in Egypt. One is to realize that there was a creator. But the next step wasn't that there was a creator, but that he also knows what's going on now. That's why that's the second tier. The Ramban sees it in patterns, where each of the Michaels divide into three sets of three. And each of the first one is about one belief. The next set is about the second belief. And there's a third one, which is Hashem is all-powerful. Yes?
So I just want to clarify, oftentimes you hear two extremes. Hashem is involved in everything that goes on.
Okay, we're going to get that in a second.
Involved in nothing that goes
on. Yes. Yes, so we're going to get into more specifics in the meantime. Let's start at the beginning. I just want to say, is this necessarily the same as believing in God? And the answer is no. This is a separate belief, and this is why. When we discussed 3 years ago, when we started this whole series, and we started talking about these 13 principles of faith, there are those who disagree with Rambam and say there's only three principles of faith, the Sefer Ikarim, but this itself is separate from belief in God. Number one is God, then Torah, and Schar and Onesh. Into Schar and Onesh, into punishment and reward, is this belief that Hashem knows and cares, because this is a separate pillar, in a certain sense, or a separate category of beliefs than everything we've discussed up till now. Now, I want to just put in the back of our minds a question which I don't want to address right now, but it is, why is this so significant? Meaning, why is this so important for us to know that Hashem cares about everything we do? It may be obvious, but let's just put that in the back of our minds, maybe throughout today's share. Let's think about that particular point. So now, Barry was raising a very good point, and that is that it's not true that this is the same across the board. Meaning, how far does this go? To what degree is Hashem really in charge, or really micromanaging every detail of this world? So what I want to do is I want to go through four particular cases. Let's see if we can get this a little... Oh, it's fine, you know, we'll deal with it as is. So four particular cases, and we're going to... And then we're going to try to deal with the sources. So case number one is... This over here is...
And like a lion, leopards have learned new tricks for hunting here.
This is the transmigration of the wildebeest across the Serengeti Plains. And that over there was a capture. What happens is there's tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of wildebeest which run across the African plains. And because this is in their transmigration, all the predators know about this. So the crocodiles lay in wait in the rivers, the leopards lay in wait in the brush. So they're all waiting. They know this is happening. So the question that I just want to raise in this particular case over here, without all more of the gory details afterwards, is not so much about Fred who got caught. You see, because, you know, Fred was an unfortunate wildebeest who got caught out of the hundreds of thousands in his particular herd. But I'm even more interested in the fact that Sam to his left and Henry to his right weren't. You know, so the question is to what degree was Fred, was there Hashkocha on Fred? I hope I'm not trying to insinuate anything about any Freds that we know. But Fred the Wildebeest over here, to what degree was he, was there an X on his tail, right? I mean, to say, how much did Hashem really worry about the fact that he should be the Wildebeest that got killed? That's the question that I'd like to raise. Okay, so Zabari, you hear what we're doing? Let's push the envelope. Did God decree or worry that this particular Wildebeest and not his neighbors on either side were in fact the ones who were killed? Let's take a little further. Hang on for a second, David. Let's move into another case over here. So let's just see if we can get this. Okay.
When the winds picked up, Granbury resident Jerry Shuttlesworth knew he was in trouble.
And I was watching the tree start to buckle over. I said, oh God, no, please, God, don't let this happen. And the wind got so strong. And at that point, I said, Junior, we're in trouble.
Junior's his dog.
Junior is Jerry's 6-year-old pit bull, his baby. Jerry grabbed him and ran for cover in his mobile home's laundry room.
I was praying. I said, Junior, it'll be okay. And I was praying, and the house went together, vacuumed in, and then blew out. And the only thing I could figure out is I went upside down holding on to him, and he was no more.
So he was just sucked out of your arm?
Right. I never felt him leave my arms. I never felt nothing. All I know, I was over him like this, and the next thing I know, I'm upside down, and he's nowhere.
So anyway, that's what happened to Junior, and miraculously, he was reunited with Junior.
Jerry got the call Friday morning and rushed right over.
Hey, buddy. Hey, Junior.
And so Junior and Jerry were reunited. Obviously, it looks like they both had a little bit of that Baruch Hashem, they both survived. The question really is over here is there were many dogs that were taken in that particular tornado, and in fact, many people who were taken in this tornado. So, to what degree was did Junior have Ashgacha? How does this question differ from Fred? What was that?
It does versus an animal.
They're both animals.
No.
But
this was
the Junior is a, well, listen, Ashgacha works both directions, right? Ashgacha means Hashem is very specifically caring about particulars, right? So Hashem particularly cared to save Jerry over here. I mean, Junior, right? So in this case, it's a little different. What's the difference?
Infected person.
Right, so this is he's a pet, meaning as opposed to Fred. Fred was nobody's animal, right? So just to put this, so to what degree does that change the equation, if anything, that in this particular case, that Junior got saved? Okay, let's move on to the next case. Over here. This is a particular incident which happened.
I know you did. We need to turn in a check. I'm not sure what the number is.
This individual is in a parking lot in a gas station. And they know that this gas station had the winning numbers for the lottery. So they're coming in now to check. Is this the guy?
34, 41, 49, 55. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So this gentleman over here who just won, I don't remember which state, it might be Minnesota, who just won the lottery. So so the question is, yeah, he does not have front teeth, you're right. So the question is to what degree was that hashkocha as well? Right, so now we're no longer dealing with animals, now we're dealing with people. But over here, this is you know, the ultimate randomness, right? Because we have the lottery. The chances in the lottery, if I'm not mistaken, is 1 of 49 billion, if I'm not mistaken, they're just in terms of the numbers, depending on how many numbers you're using, if you're using 6. To what degree is Mr. Lucky over here also under Hashkocha? Okay, so that's tier number 3. And then finally, of course, tier number 4. Anybody familiar with this? What is the... Anybody familiar with this? One second. Just one second, I want to put this in context. Yes. One second, let's see if I can get into the pause here. Okay, so this is, of course, this is the movie Ushpizin, which is a beautiful movie, very much based on a lot of Breslov thought. And so this is a particular scene where what's happening is that There is a Baal, a person who gives a lot of tzedakah, Baal tzedakah, and he's trying to give tzedakah to various people, and he realizes that one of the people on his list has just passed away. So now he needs to fill the place on that list. And in the meantime, there's this other fellow over here who's, you know, really in a difficult financial situation. And this is the convergence of those two scenes done very beautifully over here. Let's just watch over here. And that was, of course, him. And that's the question. And it wasn't always necessarily the best thing for him. We're going to see how this comes in full circle. But how does that differ from the previous case? Meaning, what's the difference between this and the previous case of winning the lottery? What was that? He was? He was praying. Right? The other fellow was probably picking up a pack of cigarettes. The gas station just happened to have scratched off the most recent numbers. Right? So to what degree does Hashkocha depend on Tefillah as well? So the four particular cases, Fred the Wildebeest, Junior the Tornado Dog, then Mr. Toothless in the lottery, and Moshe Balanga in Ushpizin. So those are the particular four questions. Let's try to move through some of the sources to try to appreciate the difference of Hashkocha in these particular cases and how it differs. So let's start at the very beginning. The very beginning is the Rambam himself. The Rambam is not now in his halachic work. He is in his philosophical work, Mor Nevuchim. The Rambam is describing in the third, the third component of Mor Nevuchim. He describes the following, how Hashkocha works. V'yoser karov, in source 2, on the very top of the next page. V'yoser karov el ha-hekesh ha-sichli. It makes the most sense logically. V'hu sha'ani ma'amin. And that is what I believe. This is long before the ani ma'amin is at the end of davening. This is what I believe, says the Rambam. She'ha-shkocha ha-elokis, omnam hu bozeh ha-olam ha-tachton. There is most certainly hashkocha. Hashem cares and knows about what's going on in this world. Rotzeh lomar mitachas galgal ha-yareach. And the inner sphere of the celestial movement. But it only applies to human beings. And everything goes based on their actions and law. All the ways of Hashem are in fact just. The rest of the we'll call it the fauna and the flora. Dati bohem das Aristo. I believe like Aristo believes, and that is loy amin klal shezeha ella nafal bashkacha boy. This leaf does not fall because God says leaf fall. V'loy shezeha akavish taraf ezeha zvuv b'gzeira me'es Hashem v'ratzona yishivata. And this, and the fact that this spider captures this particular fly, it was not Hashem's will that this particular fly should get eaten. And when so-and-so spits on the pavement and it lands on an ant and drowns that ant, it wasn't that Hashem wanted that particular ant to die. And that fish which swallowed that particular worm in the water, that Berotzon Eloki Ishi, that Hashem particularly had something against that worm. Aval Elu Kulam Eitz Etzli B'Mikre Gomur K'moy Shechoshev Aristo. That is what he calls Mikre. What's Mikre mean? Happenstance. Now, just to appreciate, what does that mean? That means? There is a system. Hashem set up a system, he pressed play, and the system's in motion. Right, and there's predators, and there are victims, and there's defense systems, and that's how things work. So the way the Rambam says it very clearly over here is, who is under what we'll call Hashkocha? Protis. Protis means individual, specific. That is humanity. when it comes to the animal kingdom, when it comes to the plant kingdom, when it comes to inanimate, the inorganic kingdom, then that's just the way it works. It's mikre. What the Rambam calls is the regular system of events. So coming back to our cases over here, Freddy happened to be just the Fred, meaning to say it could have been Sam, it could have been Henry on the other side. In the end of the day, that isn't of specific consequence to us because Hashem cares about what humans do, not so much what animals do on a specific level. Okay, it is noteworthy to note that the Sefer HaChinuch adds to this. If we just flip the page for a second, let's see if he actually how he says this. Here we are in the third paragraph. He says, "Va'anachnu in source 4, va'anachnu ba'alei das amitis, we of pure faith, lefi ma sheshamati, according to what I have the tradition, nasim hashkacha soyi baruchu al kumine belechai bichlal." Hashem does have hashkacha on the animal kingdom, but what's bichlal? Bichlal means general. This is what we call hashkacha klalis. Hashem cares in general about the animal kingdom. Kilomar, shekol min haminim hanivroim ba'olam yiskayem la'olam lo yichle v'yovad kuloi. Hashem is going to make sure that species or types are not going to disappear completely. In Hashem's hashkacha klalis, it'll make sure that nothing's going to disappear. Uvimin ha'adam na'amin ki hashkacha asoy baruchu al kol echad ve'echad bif rat. But when it comes to humanity, it's individual. That's the pasuk that was quoted before in the Ani Mamin, that you understand to where the actions go. That's what we received from our greatest. And there's many psukim which indicate the same. Now, of course, people are going to say, what about extinctions, right? What about the dodo, right? The dodo, some people say, is living on an island, you know, with Princess Diana and Elvis Presley, right? But that is, until we find that island, we're going to believe that the dodo is extinct. So either what he means to say is that the general, we'll call it types, as opposed to the individual species or hashkacha klalis, or that the rules are the same, and you say Hashem is maintaining, maybe there was hashkacha klalis that men should end, okay? Another way of looking at it is that maybe humans' free will actually does affect hashkacha klalis, but we're not going to go there right now because that's a bit of an interesting and intriguing topic. But nonetheless, let's hold this for just a quick second. That means to say that Hashem is going to make sure that all the wildebeests will get where they need to get. It happens to be that a fraction of them won't, right? Because that's just the way because there's also the leopard colony to look out for, and there's also the crocodile colony to look out for, and they need their cut. Right, so which particular wildebeests are going to be the ones who are going to, you know, support the other part of the ecosystem? That's really irrelevant. But the point is that Hashem will support that system. Just to give you another example of just how powerful this is. I remember if anybody has a chance to ever watch BBC Planet Earth, they've just come out with a new series. But the old series, I mean, it's unbelievable. So there's just an example of this. In the rainforest, I always quote this because it's just so remarkable. In the rainforest, there's a particular type of fungi which affects insect colonies. So for instance, what happens is, let's say there's a colony of ants. What happens is that the plants will release this fungus. It will grow on the plants. It will release a spore, which will affect the ant colony. One of the ants which is affected, what happens is the ant starts looking like it's drunk. So it starts walking around in a wavy fashion. And everybody realizes that this ant's become infected, so they quickly remove it from the colony, and what it does is it's infected in such a way that it climbs to the highest point it can and dies on a tree, puts its pincers around the stem of whatever it's on, and then dies. And as it dies, what happens is that from through the back of its head grows a new spore of what it was infected by. It looks like an alien growth almost from the back of its head, spreading out through the back of its head, grows new spores and releases more spores onto the ant colony below it. And what is it? It's the way that nature, and the way we'll call hashkacha klalis, allows that there's no overeating in the plant kingdom. Because when the colonies grow too big, the response of the plant kingdom is to release these spores, and there's a particular type of fungi for different types of insects, were released by different types of plants which are eaten in order to maintain the balance of the eaters and the eaten. And that's what we call hashkacha klalis. Now, it happens to be that, you know, that particular ant wasn't the one who was chosen because he was a bad or good ant. That's the way the Rambam says it. It just happens to be that he is part of the system of Hashem maintaining the balance of the ecosystem. Right, and that's what happens over here. So I just want to reserve all questions for the end, just because there's a lot of lot of ground. I don't want to get, if that's all right, please, I do want to hear questions, but let's save them for a moment, because there's a bunch of stuff we're ahead of us. So this is remarkable, okay? This is the way it works. This is the way the Rambam says it. Hashem has got an unbelievable system over there, but on the level of nature, everything is running on a level of Hashgacha Klalis, or what the Rambam calls Mikra. Okay? Mikra doesn't mean to say God's absent, but it means to say that God is not micromanaging. And then when it comes to human beings, yes, everything we do matters and counts, and there is Hashgacha Pratis. We're going to get to the more specifics there in a moment. Let's go a little further. That all accounts for Freddy the wildebeest. What about Junior the dog? So Junior is a little different, right? Because Junior happens to have a very close relationship to Jerry, right? And Jerry cares very much, as you can see, about Junior. So in this case over here, the Medrash tells us in Source 5, Omer Rabbi Chanin Tzitzipori, Rabbi Chanin of Tzipori says, Ma'aseh v'akrov echot sholach la'asos shlichuso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ovar hayardin v'zimeno HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tzfardeya achas, Ovar aleo v'holach oiso akrov v'okat eso adam. There was a scorpion which had a mission. The scorpion's mission was to sting somebody. That person deserved that sting for whatever reason. The Midrash doesn't go into why. But the problem was, there was a river between it and the victim, and the person needed to reach. So what did Hashem do? Hashem allowed it to find a frog, which it carried on its back, and then got across the river, thereby getting across the river to sting the other person. Hey, wait a second. That frog, right? There's no Hashgacha Pratis on a frog and that akrav and that scorpion. So what do you see from this Midrash? Well, there is Hashgacha Pratis on animals when it matters to human beings, right? So over here, why was there Hashgacha Pratis? This Akrav should find the right way to get across this river because it mattered for a human being. So therefore, as an extension of the Hashgacha on a human being, therefore nature will also conform to that same Hashgacha Pratis, which is what's happening over here. Another example, the Radak tells us, V'zeh mevucha v'dola min hachachamim, ki mehem omrim ki kishetoyrev ha'aryeh ha'keves. People say, well, look, when the lion captures and eats a sheep, right, a young lamb. I remember when my son was recounting the story through Rabbi Akiva in the forest. Remember the donkey, the cat, the chicken, and the flame? He says, you know, the lion took away the donkey. You know, so that's the way that it's taught at the age of 4 years old. So when the lion takes away the lamb, right, so it takes it to another safe place. So some people say, who oinesh v'anitrav me'es akel yisborach, that it's a punishment. He says, and there's others who say, if there's no way that Hashem cares about any animals. He says, we're in the middle. There is Hashgacha as it relates to humanity. Says there are other opinions and they're not worthy of ink. So this is what the Radak says again. This appears over here, which means to say that because animals can become so much, and because plant life, and because inanimate objects can become so much a part of our life, by extension of us, they also have Hashgacha Pratis in particular cases. Okay, so this is important. This is important to think about as well when it comes to the Hashgacha Pratis. However, what is most fascinating about this entire discussion, this is the most remarkable thing, is that there's different stages in Jewish history as to how this is viewed. When you go to the Rishonim is the term we give to the medieval commentators who lived during what was actually classically known as the Dark Ages in the rest of the world. For us, it was an illuminating time with incredible wisdom being spouted forth, but in the Dark Ages, so we're talking about, you know, the year, let's say, 1050 onwards to about the year 1500. That's the periods of the Rishonim. If you go through most of the Rishonim, this is what they'll tell you. And the Ramban is very complicated to understand. We're not going to spend... The Ramban is exceptionally complicated in this particular topic. But if you go to the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch and the Radak, most of the Mefarshei Tanakh, they will tell you this particular idea. There's Hashgacha Pratis on humans and there's Hashgacha Klalis on the rest of the world. However, later on, as Kabbalistic ideas started proliferating further, and Hasidus started expounding upon this about hidden and Kabbalistic ideas, it was a shift in thought, which is fascinating. And here's an example of how this shift appears. So the shift appears because there are a number, it's not that this was new, but there are a number of Chazals which indicate that this might not be 100% true. Okay, so there might be something more than meets the eye. As an example, in Source 7, this is a Gemara which says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda says, Shalach, this particular type of bird, Shalach ze ha'shole dogim el yam. It would get fish from the sea. I don't know if he's talking about a pelican. Not always sure if he's talking about a albatross or a seagull. But Rabbi Yochanan ki ha'machazei shlach. When Rabbi Yochanan would see the shlach, this bird, Omar mishpatecha tohaim rabo Hashem, your judgment is on even the greatest of depths. What does that mean? So Rashi explains on the Gemara, mishpatecha tohaim rabo, kesh zimnasa shalacha lishpoit v'la'asos nikmoscha b'degas hayom la'amis ha'mezumenes la'maves. Lashon Mari. Rashi says, wow, when Rabbi Yochanan would see this bird, he would say, mishpatecha tohaim rabo Hashem, your mishpat, your judgment is even on the greatest of depths, because you made sure that those fish got caught by the shlach. That's interesting, because that means to say that this Gemara seems to be indicating that this particular fish was under the mishpat of Hashem. Now, let's make no mistakes. That fish was nobody's pet, right? That fish had nothing to do with anybody. That was just a fish that was being hunted by a particular pelican, right? So this gives us that there might be another tier of going what's going on over here. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, the next Medrash. This refers to, you know, the famous story. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai stayed in the cave for 13 years, and he came out. So there's an interesting addendum to the story, which is not as well known. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Rabbi Lazar Berei, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, his son, Rabbi Lazar, Kehavet Tamirin bar Ma'artos. Again, this is all in Aramaic, which is why it sounds a little different. Is that it was hidden in a cave, Yud Gimel Shana, for 13 years. The Yom Yedesh Shamda, in the time that there was a persecution out, there was a price on his head. And they were only subsisting on carobs, and their skin became rather like wrinkly, and because of that level of sustenance. At the end of 13 years, they came to sit by the gate or the entrance of the cave. And they encountered a bird hunter. So somebody who had traps out for birds. The kad hava shama Rabbi Yishimon bra kala amra min shamaya dimus pasco. When he heard a bas call, a heavenly voice which had come out and said death, death. Then that bird got caught. The kad shama bras kala amra safkula hava mitzda venilkada. I apologize. The dimus is free. Then it got caught. When he said death, death. Then it got caught. Omar Tzipor Mibalade Shemaya La Mitzvah Alachas Kamakama Na Nefesh B'Devar Nash. He said, look, if Hashem willed it to be which bird got caught in the trap, it must be definitely for human beings, then it is true. Now this is fascinating, because what's going on over here is, it sounds like that Rabbi Lazar was tuned into a different frequency, right? So this is not the kind of thing that we are receiving on our bandwidth, but nonetheless, he was able to hear the sensitive, we'll call it machinations of the divine, as it appeared and as it affected these birds. And which bird got caught was actually a will and a specific will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes we hear a similar thing when the Gemara tells us, or the Medrash tells us, that there's no grass, and there's no blade of grass in this world which grows without a malach, which is makir olav min ha-shamayim, which hits it or pushes it to grow. Which gives us more of an expansive view on the way that things work, right? Because it sounds like that there's not just Hashkaka Klalis, it sounds like this particular bird, or not that particular bird, this fish, or not that particular fish, are under more of a what we call the constraints of Hashkaka Pratis, right? That's what it sounds like from these Midrashim, which is why, famously speaking, this is the quotation, the Tanya, Rav Shneur Zalman of Adi, says that that everything that happens in this world is under HaKadosh Baruch Hu's guidance. The way he describes it is that he says, look, when you have, let's say, an artisan who makes, let's say, a woodworker who makes a table. So usually the way we understand it is let's say you have an artisan who creates for us the most exquisite piece of dining room furniture. And Rahman al-Litzan, the moment he finishes creating it, you know, he is struck by lightning and he's no longer at all. There's nothing left. So did the dining room set disappear? The answer is, well, of course not. He already finished making that, right? That was done, right? Because his creation, that which he created, is independent of the artisan. So take away the artisan afterwards, and the dining room set remains, because that was what he did then. He says, well, that's not the way the world works when it comes to Hashem. The way it works when it comes to Hashem is that, now the comparison is not going to be exactly the same, but when Hashem created the world, Hashem's being there is the necessity for which upon which the world exists. If Hashem decided it's not going to exist right now, the dining room set would disappear. The artisan has to be there the entire time willing it into existence, which means to say, if you think about this for a moment, that means to say that there's a constant energy which is being provided by the Creator for everything to exist. So if this exists, it must exist for a purpose, which means to say more than Ashkava Klalis potentially, but more that Hashem wants this specific item, this specific bird, this specific fish to exist. As told by the Shomer Emunim, this is a story which is very famous, and this is why the background is leaves. Of the Amaviyah, it once happened that the Holy Scroll on Source 10, the very top of the next page, our teacher, the Baal Shem Tov Schusa Yogin Aleinu, was in a field with his students. All of a sudden, a strong wind blew, and many leaves fell from the tree onto the ground. The Baal Shem Tov said, "My sons, know that this wind just passed this instant was due to a specific worm that was situated in one of the leaves. The sun was shining particularly strongly on the worm, and the worm cried out to God. God sent the wind, which blew many leaves to the ground, and this leaf of the worm was one of those leaves." Fascinating, right? Now, it is interesting, by the way, in the Baal Shem Tov's description over here, that it's on the account of the worm, not the leaves, right? Meaning, he wasn't saying for the sake of the leaves or the tree, right? Because that could have been an additional tier of Ashkocha, but he's saying for the sake of that particular worm, which is fascinating, where you see a much more expanded scope of Ashkocha protis, it sounds like over here. And this is in the absence, once again, of humans. Okay, so this becomes more predominant, and I think that generally speaking, we are more schooled with the second philosophy, or the second school of thought in general, because in a certain sense, the Rishonim got eclipsed to this. And so I'm sure we recognize different parts of this. There are those who try to synthesize. It's not so simple how to synthesize this all. But one suggestion is the following, is that the Rambam himself says that every element of natural history, every moment that the world is moving in the right direction, is what's called a malach. Meaning to say that a natural force in this world is a malach. So, you know, why is it that, the hole in the heart of a baby closes immediately at the right moment as the baby takes its first breath, and now it's not just a circulation of the fluids, but it's now actually absorbing air, and that's how the oxygenation is happening. Well, that's a malach, meaning to say that's Hashem's way of making sure that system, that natural system, is what he calls a malach. So if you ask the Rambam about this, it is true that what happened to Freddy, the wildebeest, is not Hashkocha Protis, meaning he didn't will that particular wildebeest to get killed, but at the same time, the Rambam will tell you that it's a natural mechanism, which is Hashem's malach. So it's kind of like, if you think about it, they're not so far away, these schools of thought. Because the Rambam agrees that Hashem's still willing it to happen. Hashem is making sure that his system is working. Was he, in making the system working, identifying a particular animal that should die or not die? The Rambam is saying, well, I'm not so interested in that. But nonetheless, he is agreeing that Hashem's controlling it, just from a more remote perspective. So there are those who try to spend a lot of time trying to synthesize these. I think that it's important to recognize that when you have a debate in Jewish philosophy like this, which has greats on both sides, it's very important to realize that that means to say there's a lot of space for Jewish belief. And there are people who are going to associate more with the Rambam Sefer HaChinuch side of it. Those are going to associate more with the more Kabbalistic approaches. And there's a lot of space in this to understand. But it actually is not so relevant to us, because most of the time that we're thinking Ashkocha Pratis, we're not thinking about Freddy the Wildebeest. Okay, we're not thinking about what's happening on the Serengeti, or in the middle of the ocean, or on the that worm on the leaf. Right, that isn't what we're thinking about. We usually think about ourselves, our pets, our livestock, our things which affect us. So it's not as immediate to us to think about. What is more immediate to us is trying to understand how it affects us as a whole. So this becomes more complicated. So If it's true what we're saying over here, does that mean to say that all of us are under the same Ashkocha? Now, because we've dealt a little bit with the first two cases. What about the last two cases? Are we all under the same degree of Ashkocha Pratis?
No.
Now, so if we feel like it can't be true, right? It must not be true that we're all under the same level of Ashkocha. But how does this work? So it happens to be that there are a few tiers that human beings are also we call it exposed to, or operate in, different levels of, and I'm not going to use the word rat race, right? Because that's a very cynical way of looking at things, but there are different tiers of Hashem's watching over us. One of the examples which I feel really captures it so poignantly is an idea which I tell of every year because it's so powerful. And that is in Parashas Chukas, which we passed by 2 weeks ago. The Hashem says that Bnei Yisrael, and this is just such a profound idea, Bnei Yisrael are complaining about the man. They don't like the man. It's Elechem HaKlokel. It's this dry bread. We don't need it. No thanks, God, keep it. And so what happens is Hashem sends the Nechashim Asrafim. He sends these venomous snakes to attack them. So the way the passage describes it is Vayeshalach Bames Nechashim Asrafim. Translation being, and God. So most commonly we would say, and God sent. And if you look, most Chumashim it'll say, and He sent. But technically speaking, it's not exactly true because the word va'yishlach means as he sent, va'yishalach with a shva as opposed to a chirik means and he released. That's a noshon pl as opposed to noshon kal. Okay, there's seven binyanim, seven classic binyanim. This is number three as opposed to number one. Okay, and so that's why when somebody corrects about kore on something like this, it matters. It really changes the word. It's one dot. Okay? Now, Vayeshalach, so you say this, so you say, okay, tomato, tomato, what difference does it make whether it's he released, he sent, and the end of the day the snakes came and they ate them, right? So they bit them and people died. That there were casualties, you know. So how they got there is irrelevant to me. The answer is it's very relevant. Because what Rav Hirsch understands in the Chumash is simple like this. What happens is the people are living with a supernatural existence for 40 years. They live with this kind of bread where they eat it. And it's what's called nivla ba'evarim. It's completely absorbed into the body. There's 100% nutrition content. There's no waste product. There's nothing which the body doesn't need. But that's kind of inhibiting, you know, because in the end of the day, we appreciate the fact that food is a very big part of our existence, right? We like to talk about food. We like to buy food. We like to go out to eat food. You know, bathroom breaks are very important in our days because it gives us a little bit of space from the people we're around, right? But they didn't have that, right? They didn't have to. None of this was part of their lifestyle. It was all God says, okay, I'm going to provide everything you need so you can think about me. There's no breaks in that, right? They couldn't just go out to get coffee in the morning. So they said, look, Hashem, this is like a little intense for us. We need a little bit of space. So Hashem says, well, I'll do you a favor. If you don't want to live in my bubble, if you don't want to live in a place where I provide your every need, you know, enjoy. I'm going to remove you from that bubble. Because remember, Chukas is when the well's disappearing, the clouds are disappearing, they're complaining about the mud. That's when it's almost like this meridian where they're hitting between natural and supernatural. And they're saying, we don't want this. We want out. God says, I'll give you out. I'm going to release you from my bubble. And guess what? You know where you are? You are in the middle of a desert. What lives in deserts? Snakes. Fascinating. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm not sending snakes against you. I'm allowing you to be exposed to the natural world outside of you. And enjoy it, folks. That's what Hashem says. Vayishalach, but I shouldn't send the snakes. Hashem, release the snakes. Which now, just the reason why this example is so profound is because that means to say that humanity can exist on a level of, we'll call it Mikra 2. Right? Or we'll call give and take, cause and effect. Another way of describing it is teva. Human beings can exist on that level of teva as well. But, says Rav Hirsch, if you opt in, you can opt yourself into the bubble. Right? If you decide you want Hashgacha Pratis, then absolutely you're part of the system. Right? If you want to get there, you can get there. And in that way, yes, you now are, there's certain things which Hashem is going to be more mashpiach on. Okay, so do you see what's happening over here? So all humans are privy to Hashgacha Pratis, and the answer is, well, it depends. If you don't want it, Hashem says, well, enjoy. You know, there are 1 in 49 billion people who win the lottery. It happens. It really does happen. But, you know, the other 39, right? If we're going to go through all the 39 who didn't win it, that's just part of the way things work, right? But that's because that's what we'll call base level. And then there's Hashgacha Pratis, where you opt yourself into a high level. There's one more tier, and we're not going to deal with it to a great level today just because of the time. We're going to get into a little more next week, which is because next week we're going to deal with Schar and Onesh. Next week we're going to deal with reward and punishment. We're not into reward and punishment, we're in consequences right now. And that is that there's a third tier, which is called Mazel. Mazel, not the lower level of stars and Mazel horoscopes. Those we don't believe, they don't have power over us. There's a greater level of mazel, what the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzer talks about, which means to say that God's got a destination for this ship. You know, so for instance, that means to say that our actions do warrant certain hashgacha. So we do bad things, it does affect the way Hashem deals with us. We do good things, it does affect the way Hashem deals with us. But Hashem also has a destination where the ship's going. So for instance, Yosef and the brothers did not have a good relationship, right? And they did things against each other. They sold him. He told Lashon Hara about them. He got them into trouble. They sold him. They were bad things. They deserved in their Hashkacha Pratis to have faced the consequences. But God also had a bigger plan. That is, I need to get my nation down there to get them out there to come out that right. There's a whole bigger picture going on. So what happens is there's a convergence of a bigger plan, what we'll call the Mazel plan, with the Hashkacha Pratis of the individuals. And the two are actually moving or hovering above one another. So we're going to have to deal with that in more detail as to how we've got Hashem's plan and a specific plan of individuals. Okay, which is, those are both two tiers above the natural give and take of existence. So that's the, if we think about it in terms of three basic tiers, of course there's in-betweens among them. I would say, from personal experience, and again, we all have different experiences, but I had a very special chavrus in Israel, who, when I was in Keren B'Yavne, his name was Tzvi Davidson, now Rabbi Tzvi Davidson, a very, very special individual, and I had the schuss of learning with him. He's still learning, and he's still teaching and doing amazing things in Israel, and when we used to learn with each other, every morning he used to come to me, and he would tell me the latest Hashkacha protest that happened to him. You know, he was at the bus station, he was 3 shekels short, the person in front of him turned around and says, oh, I've got some change, do you want some change? And you ask him, and it's 3 shekels, then he was waiting by the side of the road, somebody rolls down the window and says, would you like to go somewhere? It's next door to where he wants to go in Yerushalayim. You know, that kind of thing. And every day he had stories like this. Like every single day, there was something else. And I thought to myself, you know, it's just not fair. You know, some people just really have it, you know. and then I realized something. And that is that to the degree that we recognize it, is the degree it's given to us. If you think about it, the more we opt in, the more we get it. The less we opt in, the less we get it. If you think about that, I mean, the more we're open to talking about those moments of our Hashkacha Pratis which happened in our lives, and we say, look, that really, you know, that really clicked, and sometimes not in the right way, but that really clicked. To that degree, we're saying, well, Hashem, I want this system, and Hashem says, well, I'll give you a little more to talk about me, right? And I unfortunately, in our daily conversations, Hashkacha Pratis is not naturally part of the conversation, but I think the more that we introduce it into our discussions is that even when we say Baruch Hashem, what we're trying to say is basically Hashem who did such and such and such about, oh, I'm feeling well, or this is the family's doing well, and the family's healthy, and this deal closed, whatever else it is. When we're saying Baruch Hashem, we're saying Hashem was part of that. It wasn't just we'll call the base tier of existence. The more we invite Hashem in, the more Hashem is there in this level of Hashkacha Pratis. Why is this so important? So just coming back to that question at the beginning, why is this also significant to us? And this always reminds me of Calvin and Hobbes, naturally, because on the last page, on page 7, I included one of the examples of Calvin and Hobbes. This is one of these terrible debates, you know, in the outside of the Jewish world where Santa becomes a very big thing around December time. There's this terrible fallacy which people tell their children, and that is that they only get presents if, they only get gifts if they're well behaved, right? Terrible thing, because it's a lie parents know, right? The parents know that they're perpetrating a lie, that the kids are going to, you know, get to a point where they realize it's not true, that it wasn't really Santa watching them. But nonetheless, so Calvin's still on the stage where he believes that somehow, you know, there's this incredible system where Santa's watching his every action, and there he is, he's trying to, on the last, line, he's like, he says, I'm onto him. I'm going to smack Susie with a snowball. If I do it quick, the odds are that Santa watching me at that exact moment are virtually nil. So Hobbes says to him, he says, well, what if Susie tells on you? He says, oh, I didn't think of that. She's a girl. She probably would snitch. He goes, oh, hooey. He says, well, I sure hope Santa's watching now, seeing as I'm being so good. So Hobbes says, unwillingly good, but good nonetheless. Right? So if you think about this, you know, like, Lahavdil, right? If you think about this, you know, that's the kind of system that he lives in. Now, let's translate that into the real system, where it's not just around December and it's not just about presents and red socks. We're talking about life as a whole. If you think about this, the way Ramchal understands it, and the way he says it in the second last chapter in Mesilas Yesharim is, he says in the second paragraph in Psalm 17, "V'kemon sheyisbaro lo shebechol makom shehu." If we realize that wherever we're walking, God is there. You're on a road trip in Texas, God is with you wherever you go. Then naturally it's going to prescribe our actions, because we're not going to act in the same way as if we felt that someone isn't watching us. So I mean to say that Hashkacha isn't just important because it makes us feel good that Hashem is involved in our lives. But it's also important because with that realization, it actually has impact and import into the way we lead our lives. There's no way you can sort of, you know, in 1984, there's a corner in the room where the camera isn't watching. Right? That's not how it works. There's no corners in the room in this business. Right? You can opt out, and then you're in the level of mikra. But in the end of the day, there's no level where it's not. There's no hashkacha itself. And this is what the Mesirus Hashem says is so important about knowing hashkacha itself and hashkacha part is in opting in. I want to end with one little asterisk, and that is that we're talking in the realm of theory, right? So it's very important to discuss theory because if we don't have theory, then it really all becomes, you know, mumbo jumbo, and it's all random. It's very important to discuss theory. One of the challenges we're going to have as we translate theory into practice is it's not always so easy to identify what level of system everything in our lives is owing to. And we've only talked about a little bit of Hashkocha and three tiers in Hashkocha. There are many, many other systems that are at play. So there's the system of Kapara, Schava Onesh, Yisurim Shel Ava. There's a lot of other things going on. So when things don't work out 100%, it is important to realize that identifying it backwards isn't so simple, not because the theory is incorrect, but because there's a lot of theory, and those theories apply themselves in different ways, and they converge upon one itself. So for instance, when Yosef was saying, why, God, did you put me on the back of a camel down to Midian? So, well, there are many reasons why. One was, well, you spoke Lashon Hara about your brothers. But on the other hand, God also wants a certain plan to be unfolding. And He also wants the world to be sustained, and He also wants there to be a godless and Geulas Mitzrayim, and you're going to be the foreman of that. So there's a lot of things going on. So the question is more complex when it comes to the theory applying itself to the practical, which is perhaps we'll spend some time at another point in time dealing with the practical ramifications of this. But nonetheless, this idea itself is the beginning of this, which is what the Rambam is talking about here. I hope this is enlightening and room for further conversation. Thank you very much. Rabbi Chanan Renakash Murat Sakhalish Baruchu, the Zakois, is Israel of Fitachir Balaim Torah Mislashinema, the Nechavet Zamanzikoyak Dil Torah Vyadir.